One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everybody. 31 after the hour, and again, we haven't updated the introduction yet, so I want to remind you that the group LEAP, that used to be Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, is now called Law Enforcement Action Partnership, and that doesn't mean they're abandoning the fight against the war on drugs. They're just expanding it. They're expanding their mission to include other aspects of police reform, of criminal justice reform. And so we're going to be expanding this segment as well to talk about other aspects of our criminal justice system. And joining us to discuss one of these aspects, we've got Patrick Nightingale from Pennsylvania joining us. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Why, thank you very much, and thank you for having us on. You know, as we embrace our new mission as law enforcement action and moving forward with addressing some of our additional issues.
Yes, and one of the issues that has been of concern to me and many cannabis consumers is the use and the rise of private prisons in America. The idea that we would incarcerate people and a company would make profit off of that. Of course, that profit motive then leading to states wanting to make sure people get arrested. And that, of course, provides incentive to keep punitive marijuana laws. So give our listeners a little bit of background on the rise of private prisons and what's happening now in that arena.
You know, obviously, there are, you know, financial pressures, budget pressures on states when it comes to incarceration, when it comes to criminal justice, when it comes to dealing with incarceration of prisoners. And one of the options that, you know, arose during the war on drugs, during the time of mandatory sentences, when we literally saw a skyrocketing of our prison population, was that private entities could take this burden off of government. It's something that we have seen time and time again, you know, with varying degrees of effect. Sometimes government is appropriate for running a program. Sometimes it's not. So privatization, you know, worked its way into the criminal justice reform arena and said, listen, we can help you save money. We can run prisons at a much more efficient rate than you are doing. We don't have to have prison unions. We don't have to have correction officers and this and that and the other thing. We can do it cheaply. And that was very, very attractive. And it resulted in, you know, organizations such as the Corrections Corporation of America, which is now rebranded as Core Civic, but allowing them to come forward and say, we can do this cheaper, and getting contracts with both states and with the federal government to literally house either pre-trial detainees or in some respects, you know, people who have been sentenced. But the issue is that Core Civic, what had been Corrections Corporation of America, it's a publicly traded organization. There are shareholders who have a profit stake in making sure that these corporations are successful. And in anticipation of this interview, I was doing a little bit of research, and I saw that one, you know, hedge fund trader made $40 million on the election once President Trump was elected, because the stock market said they're going to, you know, turn their back on the Obama reforms and the Obama restrictions on private prisons. And, you know, suddenly it became much more profitable to put Americans in cages. And that is, you know, what is at the core of our concern about this, is that there is literally a profit motive to ensure that there is a certain prison population. That is the antithesis of liberty, and it's certainly the antithesis of innocent until proven guilty.
Absolutely. What are some of the consequences of these private prisons? I mean, they said they could run them cheaper, but they haven't been running them better, I understand.
Yeah, allow me to share a little bit of experience from my profession. I'm a criminal defense attorney. I do federal criminal work. Most federal detainees in my area in Pittsburgh, the Western District of Pennsylvania, are housed at a private prison in Youngstown. It's called the Northeastern Ohio Correctional Center. And unfortunately, what that results in is a concentration of individuals who are facing the exact same types of charges. The ability of these individuals to, you know, work very hard to subvert our ability to effectively represent them. And, you know, literally the sharing of what should be otherwise confidential information that, you know, greatly inhibits my ability to represent my clients. Literally, you have a concentration of federal prisoners in a situation that makes it very, very difficult for criminal defense attorneys to effectively represent them. We have been complaining about it, you know, literally for years, but it's cheaper, it's easier. The Marshals Service doesn't have the ability to house these detainees in other local jails and correctional facilities, and we're stuck with this level of you know, de facto concentration. One of my bigger concerns moving forward is what is the role that private prisons are going to be in an expanded effort of immigration prosecution and drug prosecution. You know, the Attorney General has said that he intends to crack down on the federal marijuana laws. We have seen some reform recently in terms of federal mandatories. But if this administration and this attorney general wants to return to maximum prosecution of the war on drugs, maximum prosecution of the war on cannabis, and, you know, using every mandatory and every sentencing advantage that the federal government has at its disposal, it's going to need more bed space. So literally, you know, let's get private prisons back in the mix, and let's get ready to put more people in them. I think that's what this administration is going to do.
Yeah, that's my take on this as well. And do you have any figures on the results of these private prisons on the prison population themselves, as far as recidivism, abuse, medical treatment, or any other controversies that might be involved in the private prison industry?
Well, we've got about 10% of state prisoners that are being housed in the private prison industry, and about 20% of federal prisoners. And one of my biggest concerns is that, you know, individuals in these entities are going to be engaging in, for lack of a better term, prison labor, slave labor. The first time I encountered this concept when I was a young prosecutor, I thought to myself, oh, that's great. It gives prisoners something to do. It's better than just locking them in their cells all day long. But the reality is, you know, what are we going to be experiencing with a private prison industry? Because you're still going to have this mass of prisoners who need something to do. And, you know, I've seen, you know, some very concerned posts and comments that say, wait a minute, you know, we're going to crack down on illegal immigration and then arrest all these illegal immigrants, putting them into the private prison industry, and then exploit them for the same level of labor that they were doing before they became federal detainees or federal prisoners. And that temptation, even if that might be a gloom and doom scenario, is something that is realistic. It's my concern that the private prison industry will be pressured to maximize profits, and part of that will be exploiting prison labor. I just don't believe that it is something that a society that prides itself on liberty and freedom should ever, ever be flirting with. But now it is not only an option, but it's de rigueur. It's something that is routinely utilized by the United States Marshals Service, and now once again by the Bureau of Prisons.
What are some of the strategies our side can use to fight back against private prisons? I mean, it seems like there's not really a constitutional issue, although I think there ought to be somehow. But what are some of the strategies?
Some of the strategies is simply criminal justice reform. We need to incarcerate fewer Americans. And we can accomplish that first and foremost by readdressing mandatory minimum sentences for nonviolent drug offenders. That, you know, if you look at the rates of federal incarceration over the past 30 to 40 years, It has really skyrocketed when it comes to mandatory minimums and, in large part, mandatory minimum sentences for nonviolent drug offenders. We need to ensure that we continue to press this message that these types of mandatory sentences are inappropriate. We need to ensure that our legislators understand that the role of the judge and the role of the appellate system is critical. And you simply cannot strip this away and give it to a prosecutor whose sole interest may be in closing the case and have these mandatory minimum sentences continue. It's my concern that that is something that this current administration is going to potentially re-embrace with its law and justice type of attitude that it has expressed time and time again. And while I believe that support for law enforcement and police is critical and important in our society, that doesn't mean doubling down on what we see as failed policies, such as mandatory minimum incarceration, which has done absolutely nothing to address the rates of drug use. So if it's not doing anything, why continue the policy? And I'm concerned that we are doubling down on that right now.
Yeah, it seems to be that way at the federal level. The Sessions Department of Justice is already looking at rolling back Clinton or Obama era guidelines on the use of mandatory minimums. I believe it was Jeff Sessions who lamented the Justice Department not charging people and writing down the weight of their drug charge so they could avoid mandatory minimums. So if the feds look like they're going to go back to the future, so to speak, back to the 80s on this kind of stuff, is the battle then best held at the state level at this point?
There's a difference between state and federal prosecution. If your offense conduct warrants federal prosecution, there's nothing that we at the state level can do to prevent that from going up to the feds, so to speak. So I think it's necessarily two-tiered. Number one, work on criminal justice reform on the local level. Continue to work on eliminating mandatory minimums on the state level, simply because that makes sense and it keeps fewer people out of the federal out of the state system. On the federal level, we need to engage our federal representatives and our senators and to push back. Not just a little bit, but to push back significantly, because it's my concern that this administration is going to simply outsource this to Jeff Sessions and say, hey, Jeff, do whatever the hell you want to do with it. And the next thing you know, Sessions is going to repeal any of the Holder administration's or the Lynch administration's policies on when to charge mandatory minimums, when to double those mandatory minimums with what's called Rule 851, which is notice of a prior criminal conviction, when to bring in what we call the low-hanging fruit, people who are otherwise the absolute least on the in the conspiracy, the mule who's caught delivering the narcotics or whatever. There are many ways which this administration can very easily roll back any of those criminal justice reforms. And now us federal practitioners are going back to telling our clients they're looking at a 20-year mandatory simply because when they're 18, they hustled a small amount of weed or a small amount of cocaine and picked up a felony possession with intent charge. So, wow. We've got to address this on both state and federal levels. But on the federal level right now, we potentially have our back against the wall. Everybody's against us.
Yeah, well, the good news may be that Attorney General Sessions might find himself a little too busy to deal with us, given these new charges of perjury that might be surfacing in his confirmation hearings. But that means that we might get somebody else in his place, maybe a Chris Christie. Who knows what might happen, but we're just going to have to remain vigilant. One quick question before we let you go. People from LEAP have been joining my show for years and years and years now, talking about the mission as law enforcement against prohibition. Some of my listeners are concerned that with the rebrand of Law Enforcement Action Partnership, there will be a lack of focus or a loss of focus on the issue of drug prohibition. Could you address that concern?
Oh, absolutely. There will be no lack of focus or reduction of focus on drug policy reform. It's just that we've found that our ability to communicate that message is so much larger. You know, think about civil asset forfeiture for one thing. You know, that goes hand in hand with our approach to drug reform. And I think that it is something where our mission needs to be able to expand to address these issues. Mandatory minimum sentences, criminal justice reform. It's not that we're moving away from our mission of drug policy reform, but we're embracing all aspects of drug policy reform to make sure that we have the ability to speak with a consistent and coherent voice on all of these issues. So you can reassure your listeners that we're not moving away from that mission. We are embracing that mission and expanding that mission.
Yeah, it seems to me it addresses all of the things that happen in the war on drugs, from the stop and frisk that begins the encounter to the mandatory minimum sentence that ends the encounter and the private prison where the person gets stashed and all of that. So I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, and so are we, and thank you very much for giving us the opportunity to continue to reach out to your audience.
I really appreciate that. The website is still leap.cc, L-E-A-P.cc, but now it's Law Enforcement Action Partnership, and they're bringing on many, many more speakers. So if you want someone to come talk about criminal justice reforms, including ending the war on drugs in your local area for your event, contact them at leap.cc. Patrick Nightingale, thank you so much for the work you do helping federally accused suspects, and continue the good work on the private prison issue.
All right. Thank you very much, Russ. Have a great evening.
All right. When we come back, we'll have time for our radical rant, taking a look at MPP's Rob Campia's comments about the Sessions comments and the Spicer comments when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.